Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Welcome to the AHDB podcast. I'm Amy Hughes and I'm the Senior Knowledge Exchange Manager in the Beef and Lamb team. We're joined by a whole host of people today, very exciting, to talk about some of our recent exports work that we've done. So I'll just do some quick introductions before we get started. So we've got Phil Hadley, who is our International Trade Development Director, John O'Eckley, who is Head of International Trade Development, Susan Stewart, who is a Senior Exports Manager, Carl Pendlebury, who is one of our regional knowledge exchange managers in the engagement team. And then we've got two of our farmers, who is James Schuler, who is a council member and is a mixed farmer down in Oxfordshire, and David Barton, who is also a mixed farmer in Gloucestershire. So the two things that we're mainly going to talk about today is a recent inward mission that we hosted for a group of Japanese importers. And then we're going to have a little talk about a recent trip to Nebraska, which was hosted by the Nebraskan Department of Agriculture. Jono and Susan, will you just run us through the mission with the Japanese importers?
Japan is a big importer of food, including across the meat categories. We've had pork access for a number of years, and we gained beef access on the 10th of January 2019. So just as we were getting traction for imports into Japan from the UK, obviously the pandemic came along, which kind of stalled a bit of our activity. So this mission, it was originally planned for 2020. Then we thought we'd give it another go in 2022, but COVID got in the way of that in Asia. So it was third time lucky of bringing five really significant meat importers to the UK. It's really important as part of our role to showcase what we do so well here. And obviously we've got a tactile product that people need to touch and taste. So we managed to recruit five importers from Japan. I was over there for some other business in November, and I had one-to-one faced meetings with these guys to encourage them to come and see what we do so well in the UK. It was pretty challenging because one of the cultural things with Japanese businesses is they don't like talking business in front of other people, and some people didn't think we'd make it work. But luckily, we managed to persuade them to come together. And working with other teams around AHDB, they had a great experience. And I'll just pass over to Susan maybe to tell you a bit about what we actually did in the 5 days they were here.
So we took them around the Lake District, including a beef processing plant visit. So to see our high standards and traceability utilised within the processing sector before heading up to the Lake District to go onto a range of farms, beef and sheep farms mainly, and understand what our high standards of animal welfare are, how we're farming, the heritage and the countryside that makes our meat so good into Japan. And culturally, Japanese people really like to understand the detail of things. They like to understand the ins and outs of things. And so actually getting them onto farm and allowing them to see that, understand what we're doing to maximize grass production, what we're doing to enhance that and utilize our natural environment was really important, and gave them a really good understanding and lots of detail of how we're doing that. We headed down to Butcher's Hall for a showcase dinner so they could really see and taste the quality food that we produce, and meet some of our exporters, as well as a butchery demonstration for them to understand some of the different butchery that goes on.
So it's really important, isn't it, with these inward missions that we showcase like the whole supply chain. They don't just want to see the live animal, and they don't just want to see the product. They want to see the whole sort of everything to do with it.
Exactly that. And one of the comments we had back from one of the importers was that he'd been on a lot of trade missions before and been around a lot of meat plants, but this was the first time he'd ever been out on a farm to see the livestock production. So that's something they can really take away and has learned something from that.
And what sort of businesses were these people from? Were they, you know, were they buying for supermarkets? Were they buying for food service? Was it a bit of a mix?
Some of these buyers would be supplying into food service and high-end food service, as well as some of these guys would be a bigger importer than distribute to sub-distributors within Japan. So a really big reach for importing.
And what's our current export market like with Japan, Jono? How much are we sending over there?
So last year, we sent about £23 million worth of protein. So it's a big beef market. £16.5 million worth of beef. The volume of that grew 36% last year, so really encouraging. Sheep meat is not a highly consumed product in Japan, apart from regionally, but really encouragingly, exports actually started taking off really strongly in the back end of last year, and the volume of sheep meat exports to Japan was up threefold by the end of the year. So that's really encouraging. The global markets are pretty challenging at the moment, but it's really important we've got a broad portfolio. Japan's a big importer, and we will continue to work with these guys. One other thing that's really interesting that came out of that mission was the wider comms that's taking place out to the industry, both here in the UK and also in Japan, because we work really closely with an agency in Japan to extend our reach. One of the biggest beef importers into Japan who couldn't make the mission has actually been in touch with me since then. So that's really encouraging to get our message out there that the UK is a great place to produce really high quality protein.
Okay, so Cal, we'll come to you next, because you were you helped a lot with this inward mission for these Japanese importers. And it's not, obviously, not just a case of getting them off the plane and rocking up at some random farms. Do you want to just talk a little bit about, I suppose, the brief that you got from Jono and Susan? Because that's really important, because as an engagement team, we obviously don't know what these importers are after, really. So we have to take our lead from these guys. But then you were responsible for finding the farms and various other bits and pieces. Do you just want to talk us through that?
Yeah, it was a real privilege to be involved in this mission, and it started 7, 8, maybe 9 months prior to the mission landing, with a brief coming forward around we want 3, maybe 4 farms, we want best practice in sheep and beef, and we want to see some really great countryside around the northwest of England. So you set about finding the farmers, and the brief grows a little bit in terms of messaging for farmers, meeting several times with the farmers as we go along so that we have the right message to be dripped into the visitors coming onto the farm, and actually just really making a great experience around the livestock that's both really engaging, but also sometimes a little bit tactile, that you can get a little bit close enough to them, maybe across the fence or by the crush or whatever, so that they actually get that touchy feel sort of experience with them that they would get nowhere in the world on really great animal welfare friendly farm places. It's actually making a connection with people, that they want to trade with the people, and they've got a connection with the product all the way through the chain, right the way from birth through to the item that lands in their country. With that in mind, it was then set out to create a bit of a dinner, a showcase dinner, and invite some influential people from around the region for them to meet and talk with, and really pull a really high class dinner together. And then also a typical pub come everyday type dinner that we can actually showcase what we do daily with ours, for them to take different ideas back. And actually, if there are cultural difference in those foods, which in Japan, they did ask for a little bit of rice towards the end of the mission, but actually they've really enjoyed the food and understood what we were about with it, that we use it in a high class professional way, so that the messages that they take away are just all about the usage and the quality.
The farmers that hosted them up in the Lake District, what was their take on it? What did they have to say?
It's a bit of bewilderment to start with when you first start approaching farmers and saying we want to bring half a dozen, maybe 10 international visitors to look at them importing into their country our product. And it's a bit like, why am I special? Why am I included in this? And, you know, and the farms that we chose were actually because one was really great with the genetics and really influential with lots of farmers around to actually talk about this mission afterwards. Another was selected because they've done a really great job with rotational grazing, grassland management, the green pastures, the view that came out of the farm, and actually just talking about how the lambs, the sheep actually grow on this particular type of grazing. And then the beef unit that we went to, well, we tried to steer away from the genetic talk there, because they have genetics from all over the world coming into the place. And what you don't want to do is give them a false impression that they can get this from somewhere else, but actually showcase the animals at the absolute best, which is what we did, with a really great vision over the fells and just really great talk about the breeding aspect of the animal and how they take that into different herds for the genetics that go into that to create a consistent product that they would be taking away. So actually, that message needs to be drip fed into the farmers that are selected to go on this journey with us, so that they just give that right message without too many prompts and it just looks second nature.
And I bet they enjoyed it, did they, hosting them?
They loved it. The feedback afterwards is just a real buzz around the farm. It's a real buzz around the community around them, actually. You know, I was at an event yesterday, so what are we now, 2 months out from the actual mission, and I had 7 or 8 farmers come into me and say, oh, you had Japanese visitors just at the next farm to me. You need to bring them to me next time. I want to have a go at that. So actually, the buzz that it actually goes and lifts the entire region is just phenomenal. And as I said at the beginning, it's just a real privilege to be able to do that for a region that you're working in.
Jono and Susan, we've had this mission. It was really successful. What's the next steps after one of these? Like, what's the crack afterwards?
So we work with an agency in Japan. I'd like to say it was foresight that we started the procurement of that just before the pandemic. So that enabled us to keep some traction in market over the last 3 years. But so we're working with some restaurants there at the moment to promote British beef. We'll do a showcase event in November, and that will be a face-to-face event that Susan will manage, tied up with other activity in the region. So we're there. And then the big event in Japan for the meat industry is a trade show, which happens every March. So we will be back at FoodEx with the British Meat Pavilion. We will have all the leading beef, lamb and pork exporters with us there. We'll do a showcase event around that, which will be a tasting event, so people again get to taste the product we're shipping out there. And that will conclude the activity for this financial year. And then we will extend that with a plan going further forward next year to make sure British meat is at the forefront of their mind.
Let's move on to the visit that we've just had to Nebraska. So there was a small group of us went over there, Phil, yourself, David and James and me all went over, hosted by the Nebraskan Department of Agriculture. Phil, do you want to kick us off and just tell us what the trip was about and why we were there?
As you've heard previously, you know, it's all about relationship development and understanding what happens in production, in trade, in commercial relationships, so you can compare and contrast and understand where we fit in and, importantly, where our product fits in. So the US has been a target market for us for some years on the beef and lamb side, and we've had pork access for a little bit longer. So we've got successful pork trade with the US, and it tends to be, you know, the US is not short of pork or beef for that matter. But what we can do is high quality, high welfare, extensively reared type products that have a point of difference. And similarly with beef in terms of fitting into consumer demands, really. If you understand the market, you can see where our products fit. And we've spent about almost 10 years seeking approval for beef and lamb on the back of that. So we got beef access in 2019. That market's was worth just over 8 million last year. And we've recently got lamb access. But let's be clear, they also see opportunities here. So they come to us to learn, to see where their product fits in the same way. So this trip and Nebraska, why Nebraska? Because it's a huge beef producing state in the US, a very eminent state for beef production. They want to learn about the UK. We want to learn about what they're doing and make those comparisons and see where we do indeed fit in from a commercial perspective. Nebraska State Department of Agriculture, given predominance of beef feeding in the region, is very keen to build those international relationships. And they visited the UK a number of times in the last couple of years. So they wanted to reciprocate and show us what they do to promote their production. And we saw a range of farms on it. They're not short of land in Nebraska, that's for sure. Low stocking densities, impressive production. And of course, they were demonstrating to us why they believe their product is the best in the world, as we believe ours is. And it's also worth adding, as well as being big beef producing nation, it is also home of Lincoln University in Nebraska, which is a world leader in meat quality and meat science research. So that really led to a very nice round program that included farms, beef processing facility and their meat science department at the university.
So David and James, you came with us. What did you think?
From a beef producer, it was fascinating, really. And I think what I noticed immediately was that this constant product from start to finish. So the cows, really smaller cows than we'd have in the UK, really efficient, efficiency right the way through their system from start to finish. And okay, so we went to some fantastic ranches, and I guess, you know, you'd expect that. But for me, the real telltale was when we ended up at a processing plant on the last day, and you look down the line, and those carcasses are peas in a pod. Every one is the same. So it isn't just the ranches that we visited. They're all on the same page, producing what the market requires. And they're really tuned into that. So that comes from their genetics, genomics, and the phenotyping of those cows. So they're getting that constant product, which is really important. That just builds in, for me, that's efficiency right the way through. And they farm in a much harsher environment than we do. So things are different. There are some really significant differences, and they use what they've got to the very best of their ability. As we do in the UK, we have lots of grass, and we use that, and we need to probably do that more. So for me, the whole process of how they're doing it and that efficient process, they're really tuned into that. And I think that's what we can learn a lot from. I was really envious of their R&D, you know, visiting that Meat Animal Research Centre, you know, just blew me away, the sort of stuff that they're doing there. So they have the support, and they have the support for the community that they farm in. So that's something else that I was really envious of.
Yeah. What about you, James?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I mean, I echo everything that David said. I mean, their genetics out there was something else. They've really focused on a phenotype. They have a really harsh environment. Stocking rates were, I think, 20 to 1. So one cow to 20 acres out there. Their ranches are, they're very fragile ecosystems. So their cows were, I'm going to say, 550 kilos. They were small cows that survived in that. So the epigenetics of all of it trying to come together as a whole farm system was amazing. The thing I think that I thought was very different out there to us, a lot of it is they're spoiled because they're like 80 to 85% Black Angus out there. So everybody is able to use the same genomics. They're able to use the same EPDs or EBVs, as we call them. But there's a few pedigree producers producing a vast amount of bulls. We went to Keneally Angus. They've got 3,000 cows on 55,000 acres, but they sell 1,000 breeding bulls a year that are all the same. So when they go into the commercial markets end up with everything being the same. I mean, it's just mind-blowing by, you know, the comparison of us having with all our sort of 8 to 10 dominant breeds and probably 50 or 60 crossbreeds that go with it. I mean, their uniformity was something else. The thing that was surprising was, like, you know, you've got a guy serving 3,000 cows on time day eyes out there. And we've got guys over here thinking that 30 or 40 cows is too many to try and do. The efficiency of the system was mind-blowing. The culling that they did out there, if a cow produced heavy calves, she went. If she didn't bring a calf back, you know, from that year, she kind of went. Anything with bad feet went. You know, bull selection was just mind-blowing how they went through them. But it has to be out there. When you've got a guy calving, you know, 600 cows in about 3,000 acres, you know, they're not going pulling calves out on a regular basis, that is for sure.
It's important to say that when we were over there, we had biblical rain. I think they thought we were like rain gods because they hadn't had any for God knows how long. So the feedlot was in a bit of a mess when you went, or very muddy and very wet. But guys, what did you think about feedlots? Because there's this obviously consumer perception of them and all that kind of thing. What were your thoughts on them?
The feedlots that we saw, I mean, they were really, really efficiently well run. You know, there was 50,000, I think, the one we went to with Trey. And all of that's all run on horseback. You know, they run everything back in groups of 400 or 500. They were really well done. I mean, I think Trey said that they fed everything once a day. The stuff that was sort of 150 days out from being finished might be fed twice a day. And stuff that was in the finishing animals that were in the last 60 days might be finished 3 times a day. Just to get the most amount of fresh food in front of them, get the most daily live weight gain on. They were really efficient and really well run.
Yeah, and a lot of their research that we heard about at the Meat Animal Research Centre and at Lincoln University was based around the air and water quality issues surrounding some of these feedlots and in general, but mainly the feedlots. So they are, the one thing that struck me was that their research was vast, like so much research going on, as you said, David, but it was also very applied, like really applied to what was actually happening on farm, wasn't it? You know, they spoke about ways of mitigating things that smell in the air. Can you remember, Phil, what were they using that on the feedlot floors for?
VOCs, volatile organic compounds.
That's it. Yeah. So they were looking at that. They were obviously looking at water quality, because at the moment, all the water comes from an underground aquifer, doesn't it? Let me see if I can pronounce it. Ogallala aquifer. Yes. Nailed it. Which I got the impression was relatively stable at the minute in terms of the level of it. But obviously that's a massive concern for them, because they just don't get any rain, do they, over there? Or very, very little rain over there. Okay. The other thing I just want to pick up on is, as you said, David, the whole community is connected to agriculture. And I know we were probably in a bit of a bias state, because Nebraska is just all agriculture, isn't it? But when we were eating dinner one night, somebody was telling me about the agricultural module that's available nationwide in schools, and kids can choose to do that. And nearly everybody does it in Nebraska. But basically, they were teaching kids how to use EBVs at the age of like 14, 15 in schools. Hillary said that her daughter, I think she said she was 14, was just doing a project for the agricultural module to scale up the size of her herd. So she was taking it from 6 cattle to 10, and she had to do a full business plan at the age of 14. So it's just ingrained, isn't it, in them over there? What were your thoughts on that?
It's just, Amy, it's a completely different mindset. I mean, the whole from start to finish, you know, from a very early age right the way through, the way in which they look at agriculture. I mean, food production is important in the US. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the state of Nebraska, those guys, they are there to produce food for the nation and produce food to export. And that's driven from a very early age right the way through. And I am quite envious of that, because that food production is important. And everybody in the state gets behind that. Now, we don't, unfortunately, have necessarily the same level of commitment in the UK. It's a different environment. I certainly did recognise that how important that was from the early age. The school that we visited, it was very evident how important agriculture is. It is quite different, but right the way through, this is and through to the university and the research centre, everything is attuned to production of food.
The first day when it absolutely hooned it down with rain, I mean, we're talking inches of rain overnight. David and I still were part of the sketchiest internal flight I think I've ever been part of. But we went to a local school who their sports day got rained off, and one of the local producers had given the beef burgers to the school, and we went in. Everybody was engaged. Everybody knew where their food came from. There wasn't a single child that wanted anything other than a beef burger. It was really nice to see that sort of connection with it. I'm not sure whether that's just Nebraskan driven. I think it's quite a false environment. I think if you went east or west coast, it might not actually quite be the same. But yeah, People's connection with agriculture and food was much closer at heart. And it would be something really nice if that was able to be driven within the UK.
Phil, any next steps to that trip then? Are we seeing them again this year or not?
There's quite a few levels on that, really. One is that ongoing dialogue, so we can compare and contrast standards of production and understand what they're thinking and how they're viewing the UK market as a challenge for us, but equally how we can tap into that US market as an opportunity for our products. So there's the commercial aspects of that and the ongoing relationship, but there's also, you know, the learnings that we've all had is sharing those through things like this, so that a broader audience, our broader levy payers, can understand what's going on elsewhere and how they can adopt some of those changes. I know both David and James have taken those learnings away and are already kind of thinking about how they apply those in their own businesses, and they make good case studies for those types of learnings. But going forward, we'll continue a dialogue with the people from Nebraska and more broadly across the US, because there is, you know, it's absolutely clear that we're going to be in a more liberal trading environment. We will see our product there and indeed their product here. So actually doing that from a level of understanding and having that knowledge is going to be important to take us forward. You know, knowing what makes them tick and how they're viewing our market will be as important to us as knowing how we can we can sell our products there.
Yeah, I think from an on-farm perspective, the biggest thing that I took home was I had probably gone there falsely assuming that it was a very industrial process over there for whatever reason, but it's just not at all. The mindset isn't industrial. As David quite rightly says, it's just efficient, isn't it? Those cows are very well cared for. There was no issues with health and welfare or anything. And they were there to do a job, weren't they? They were very much there to do a job, and they've been set up to do so through genetics and everything else.
And I think that's one of the kind of misconceptions, really, that we probably most people view it as a very industrialized practice. But these cattle hit a feed yard towards the end of their lives. They killed relatively young. Age at slaughter was younger than perhaps the average here in the UK. But again, efficiency at relatively rough rangeland with mum, grass and milk, and then into a feed yard for final finishing, which gives them a very consistent product with the right level of fat cover that the US consumer is looking for. And indeed, of course, really big exporters to other markets. So they clearly get that bit right. The other bit in terms of learnings, you know, we as an organisation have had a long link up with Nebraska because of the Meat Animal Research Centre, as that being the US's centre of excellence for livestock production research, and also Lincoln University being the organisation, if you like, the academic institute that really rethought the beef carcass some 20 years ago, and looked at different cuts from the carcass, moving away from simple strip loins and ribeyes into alternative cuts. And, you know, that percolates through over time. What can we learn from the US? Well, you have to go into a pub or a supermarket at the moment and you'll see a flat iron steak or possibly a Denver steak. And effectively, those were reimagined at the University of Nebraska in a piece of work funded by our US counterpart levy body to look at adding value to the carcass. So in terms of shared learnings, that's probably, you know, why are these things in place? Why are these exchanges in place? Because they lead to those shared learnings. And the UK industry has been able to harvest, you know, copy the American model, if you like, and harvest alternative cuts and add value to the carcass more broadly.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, everybody. That was really great. We'll see you all later.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.